Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Introduction to the Jewel Ornament of Liberation by Lama Cathy Wesley. In this week's talk, Lama Cathy gives an overview of the upcoming 11-part series based on Trungpa Rinpoche's commentary on Gampopa's Jewel Ornament of Liberation. This book details the Lam Rim, or gradual path of liberation and skillful means. Lama Cathy explains the stages of the path and how it allows us to progress toward enlightenment. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, and welcome to the 11:30 a.m. Columbus KTC Dharma Talk. And as I mentioned at the outset, I am your temporary instructor for today. Cathy Lamo had actually prepared a full class for today, but she woke up not feeling well, so she asked me if I would substitute. So I'm being the sub teacher today. So you will not get the same presentation that you would have gotten from her, but I hope it will be useful. I'm Cathy Wesley, and I am making this presentation on behalf of the Columbus Karmateksum Choling. For many of you, this will be a bit of a surprise because we haven't been webcasting our 11:30 a.m. Dharma Talks always. We can do it from time to time, but we're webcasting for our Zoom audience this morning for our usual 11:30 Dharma Talk. And this week's topic is really interesting because you're here to see the beginning of an 11 video series on the gradual path to enlightenment. So many people, when they come to learn about Buddhism the first time, they get really excited. They say, "Can I like get enlightened now? Could I please be enlightened now?" And that's lovely. You know, that's lovely. But we have to understand that enlightenment is a step-by-step process. We didn't get confused overnight. And so we're not going to get unconfused overnight. But if we follow a set of steps, these sets of steps that have been very carefully constructed by the masters before us, if we follow in their footsteps, treading the gradual path as they did, we will be able to learn the Dharma and practice the Dharma, because these are two separate disciplines. You can learn intellectually about the Dharma, which is wonderful, because for many people, it's the first time that their inner philosophies are articulated. Many people say this to me. They say, I came to Buddhism and started reading Buddhism, and it spoke to me. It actually said the things that I have always believed. So there's the intellectual side of Buddhism that's great to understand. But almost more important than the intellectual side is the practice side. And that means that once we learn that everything is interdependent, we have to put that into practice by actually changing our behavior. We have to start acting as though everything was interdependent. We have to start treating other people as we would ourselves want to be treated. And so learning the intellectual topic of interdependence, all things are connected and depend upon one another, which is a Buddhist teaching. And it's great to learn it, but it's even better to practice it. And so the graded path teachings show us how these principles, these intellectual principles, can be put into practice. To me, it's the ultimate pragmatism. It's incredibly pragmatic. To learn the whole intellectual part of Dharma, and then do your best to practice it. So that's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about, and I'll get into the details after I say an opening prayer. And this prayer is a prayer with which you can kind of join in your heart and in your mind, and if you join in your heart and in your mind, You can just dedicate it, this session, to all sentient beings, and have the sense that you are here, not just for yourself, but for the benefit of all sentient beings. I'll begin with this short prayer. It's the four-line prayer of taking refuge that's in our Columbus KTC prayer book. And if you, again, if you're not familiar, just join in your heart. O Sanje Chodong Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Su Chi Da Chi Chin So Chi Pe Su Nam Ki Dro La Pin Chi Sanje Tru Par Sho. In English, in the Buddha, his teaching, and the Sangha most excellent, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all suffering beings. And now I'll recite one more prayer. The prayer, this is the prayer to the gurus of the lineage. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chi War Pede Den Shula Kadrin Jembo Goneche Sunte Kusun Tugging Utrup Sal Duso. Okay, thanks everyone. Really lovely. Thanks for being here today. So you may ask, what is this 11-part series that we're starting today? The good news about it is that because it's a series, you can join anywhere. You can join in topic one, you can join in topic 11, you can join in topic five, doesn't matter. And on additionally, we will have all of these videos available at our Columbus KTC YouTube page. So when this is finished, we'll be downloading the video and then uploading it to YouTube so you can catch up with all of the different aspects of this. What the book we are going to be studying is, we're actually going to be studying a commentary on a graded path text. And the name of the book is The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, J. Gampopa's Jewel Ornament of Liberation. And it is available. It's written by Trangu Rinpoche, and that's T-H-R-A-N-G-U, Trangu Rinpoche. And you can find a link to buy the book at a great little website called www.rinpoche.com. Somebody got this web address really early in the process. And so it's Trungpa Rinpoche's page. So in any case, we're using his commentary, and you'll find out why when you see the actual book that we're looking at. The actual book we are looking at is the rather voluminous Jewel Ornament of Liberation. There have been at least three translations of this text made. This one was made by Kempo Kunchok Jaltsen. But in any case, it's a doorstop book, and so when we, and it's, which means it's thorough, it's absolutely thorough, but it is absolutely long. And so reading the commentary where he explains all of the meanings of the words in the book, that's the best. And so we're going to be using Trungpa Rinpoche's commentary. And not only that, we're not going to study each and every page of the book. We're going to cover the topics generally and then start to work on study materials so that you can work your way through the book on your own if you want to. So we're starting this set of videos in order to help us understand the main graded path or gradual path text of the Karmakaju lineage, so that we can have this as a resource online for future students who want to learn the basics from A to Z of Buddhism. And if you remember during the introduction, I mentioned the word Lam Rim. And for the audience on Facebook, Lam Rim, I don't know, it might be backwards for you, but we'll figure out a way to get it forwards for you. But Lam, L-A-M, is the Tibetan word for path, and Rim, R-I-M, is the Tibetan word for gradual or graded. And the reason this is called Lam Rim is because, as I mentioned in the introduction that I don't think we filmed, that when people start the Buddhist path, they want to see the progress bar, essentially. I mean, those of us who have grown up on computers know what a progress bar is. A progress bar is that small line that crosses the bottom of your screen when you are loading something. And it shows that the program or the application that you want is loading, or that the file you want to see is loading. And I think that human beings love progress bars. We love to know how we're doing. We love to know that we're following the right path. And we love to know that the path is actually going to have a conclusion and is actually taking us somewhere worthwhile. And so when we study Lam Rim, that is our way of studying the progress bar of our Buddhist path and the progress bar of our awakening. So these texts are generally divided into multiple sections and parts, but they follow generally the paths of the yanas. Y-A-N-A, yana is the Sanskrit word for path. Yana, it's the Sanskrit word for path. And they follow these yanas. The first yana is called the Hina yana, H-I-N-A, Y-A-N-A, Hina Yana, and it's called smaller path. It's not smaller because it's not as good. It's smaller because its scope is smaller. And Hina Yana is also sometimes called the path of individual liberation. And individual liberation means that we experience suffering in our life and we start our path of Buddhism and meditation in order to accomplish liberation from suffering for ourselves alone. And so this is why it's called the path, the smaller path or the path of individual liberation, because it's about our liberation. The second of these yanas is called the Maha, or greater or larger yana. And it's called larger or greater, not because it's better, but because its scope is broader. It's called Maha or great because it is about the liberation of ourselves and all sentient beings. And so in this way, we practice the Hinayana at the beginning. It's our training wheels path. It's our beginning path. And then we practice the Mahayana, which is the next phase of our path. And so we start out only for our own interest, but then end up practicing for all sentient beings. What's interesting about this is that when we are practicing for ourselves alone, we might sometimes get a little discouraged because we might not see the progress bar and we might not see how we're doing. And we might get a little discouraged and maybe even give up the path because we don't feel we're progressing fast enough or in the right way. And part of the reason for that is because we're practicing for ourselves alone. Whereas if we practice for others, if we're doing it for other people, then when we get a little discouraged, we're saying, well, you know, maybe this isn't going the way I wanted it to go or whatever. But if we can actually think about other people at that moment, we might feel encouraged and moved to keep going and to keep moving and to keep practicing if we're doing it for the benefit of others. Now, there's a subset of the Mahayana path that we haven't mentioned here yet so far, and that is the Vajra Yana. And Vajra means indestructible, the indestructible Yana. It is one of the Mahayana paths. Basically, it's called yana or path, but it's really just the Mahayana. It's not so much a separate yana as it is the Mahayana with special practices added in. And those special practices are the practices of the path of liberation and the path of skillful means. The path of liberation practices are such practices as Mahamudra, deep meditating deep penetrating insight meditation. Dzogchen is another example of deep penetrating insight meditation on the path of liberation. But the path of skillful means is the path of yogic discipline, which includes the practice of mantra and visualization. So these special practices of deep meditative insight and mantra and so on are special practices that the Vajrayana adds to the Mahayana motivation to benefit others. And the reason these special practices, the path of liberation and the path of skillful means, part of the reason that they are placed here is so that they can move our progress bar, if you will, along more quickly. So, but how are we going to know our progress bar unless we know our path? And if we don't know our progress bar or path, how are we going to know how we're doing? So that's a little bit about why we study the Lam Rim, so that we can know where we begin in the Hinayana, where we develop in the Mahayana, and how we attain Buddhahood. And if you this particular book, I will write into the chat on Zoom, and then when this broadcast is finished, I will on Facebook, I will answer all questions that are in the comment section on this video. And I will also in the comment section on the Facebook side, I will type in the information for the website where you can buy this. There it can be purchased from two websites, and I'll put it right now in the chat for everyone who's watching this on Zoom. The first one I'm sending is www.namsebangso.com, and that's namsebangdzo.com. And then the other one is rinpoche.com. Yeah. Yes, there's already a question from the audience on Zoom saying, can we use the Precious Ornament of Liberation? Same book. They've translated the title at least three different ways. So you can follow along in that book if you like. We're not going to be following the book page for page or section for section. We're not going to follow each and every page because it's only an 11-part series, and we figured we'd need about 20 to 25 classes, and we thought that was just a little bit too much. So all we're going to do this time is a bit of an overview. And then what we'll do the next time around is we'll do a deep dives on specific chapters as separate videos that will be used as a companion to the series we're making here. So anyway, it'll be like the DVD extras on your movies. So anyway. So by the way, thanks to everybody for writing questions in the Zoom chat. I want to let you know that I can't watch the questions in the Zoom chat and give the talk at the same time. So I may pause from time to time to check on the questions in the Zoom chat. So who was Gampopa? Gampopa, whose picture is here for those on the Zoom audience, and here for the picture for the folks on the Facebook audience. He's known as one of the shining jewels of the Kagyu lineage. He's called the Dharma Lord, or J-E. When you see the word J before somebody's name, it means they're a lord of Dharma or a master. J. Gampopa, and he lived from the years 1079 to 1153 in our common era, also known as AD. And he lived at the time of the great Buddhist saint Milarepa, and he was one of Milarepa's main disciples. Now, if you remember the teachings we've given on our Mahamudra lineage and how the lineage was passed down from teacher to student in an unbroken line for 1,000 years, you know that the Kagyu lineage began in the 900s in India with the great Indian Saint Tilopa. And then he passed it to his disciple, the Indian Saint Naropa. And Naropa passed it to the Tibetan saint, Marpa, and Marpa passed it to Milarepa, and then Milarepa passed it to Gampopa. So Gampopa is the person who received the Mahamudra transmission of Tilopa from that lineage. But he also joined that teaching on Mahamudra with teachings he had previously received as a monastic. As you know, there developed many traditions and lineages of Buddhism in Tibet. There are four main lineages. And then one of the earliest lineages, which eventually got folded into one of the modern ones, was called the Kadampa tradition. And this tradition started at the time of Atisha, who visited Tibet in the 1000s. And when the Kadampa tradition got started, it was mainly monastic. And Gampopa was a Kadampa monastic. And what did he learn in the Kadampa tradition? They believe very strongly in Lam Rim. They believe very strongly in a gradual path that was traversed very uniformly. And so he learned that. The other thing he learned was the mind training techniques of Tonglen. And Tonglen is the sending and receiving compassion practice. He learned these practices of compassion and mind training from Atisha's lineage. So he had all of these teachings of mind training and the Lam Rim. And then on the other side, when he met Milarepa, he got the practices of mantra and the practices of Mahamudra. And so what they call Gampopa in the history books, they call Gampopa the person who united the two streams into one, the Lam Rim and the compassion practices of the Kadampa and the mantra practice and yoga practice and the Mahamudra practice of the Kagyu lineage. So the Kagyu lineage essentially in some ways begins with Gampopa because he was a monastic. All of the previous lineage holders had been lay people. And so Gampopa brings the monastic tradition to Mahamudra and then begins to systematize it. And he systematizes it in his book, The Precious Ornament of Liberation, or Jewel Ornament of Liberation. And so he crystallizes his teachings in this book. And then his student, Gampopa's student, was named Dusum Kempa. I mean, he had many students, but his principal student, or the greatest of his students, was Dusum Kempa. The word du, D-U, sum, S-U-M, means three times, meaning the past, the present, and the future. So this teacher's name was Dusum, or three times. And then his second name was Kenpa, K-H-Y-E-N-P-A, Dusum Kenpa. And Kenpa means the person who knows. And so that the knower of the three times, sometimes he's called omniscient, the knower of the past, the present, and the future. And the reason that this word is used sometimes to describe enlightened beings is that if we look at our current state of mind, our current mind is very confused. Our current mind does not know everything. Our current mind maybe doesn't even know itself. And so we are confused beings, but once we become unconfused through the practice of meditation, we too can become awakened beings and become knowers of the three times. And so that's why they call the Buddhas, or sometimes the Buddhas are called the victorious ones. They're victorious over the sufferings of the world. These victorious ones are omniscient. And so that's why the name Dusum Kenpa it's so apt. It's such a good description because he became an enlightened being. The student of Gampopa became an enlightened being himself. Now, you might also recognize the name Dusum Kenpa in that he is the first of the 17 Karmapas. The Karmapas have been the heads of the Kagyu lineage for about 900 years and have passed the teachings of Gampopa and the other great masters of the Mahamudra tradition, they have passed these teachings on to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And so the Kagyu lineage essentially begins with Gampopa, the uniter of these two streams into one, and the one who created the monastic traditions of the Kagyu that then came to their flowering under the 17 Karmapas. And so a lot of people say, well, how is it that these practices of Mahamudra and Dharma are, how are they still fresh? How could they possibly still be fresh? They're 1,000 years old. And if you talk about Buddhism in general, Buddhism is 2,500 years old. So you could say, well, how can these practices that are so old speak to us today? And I think part of the reason for this is that the people who have heard these teachings over the ages have not just said, nice book. I think, nice book. I think I'll study it. Or, nice practice. I think I'll practice it. They didn't just come at it from an intellectual point of view. They came at it from their heart. They realized that the Buddhist teaching that suffering is part of life. Remember the Four Noble Truths? Suffering's part of life. Second Noble Truth, suffering has a cause, which is clinging and fixation. Suffering has a solution is the third noble truth, which means if clinging and fixation is the cause of suffering, the solution is letting it go. And then the fourth noble truth is the path that leads to the end of suffering. And that path is do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. And so people in every generation have recognized that the sufferings of this world can be transcended. And everybody in every generation, not everyone, at least some people from every generation is what I was trying to say. At least a few people from every generation have taken those teachings to heart and used them on themselves with almost superhuman diligence, so that they themselves could accomplish awakening. And then through their teachings, pass those teachings on to the next generation. So if you ask, are these teachings valuable now? Are they useful now? The answer I would give is yes, because every generation has produced enlightened beings. It's not something that sits on a shelf in a dusty book. It's something that people have through their own desperation to be free, their own determination to be free of confusion, their wish to be free of confusion. They have taken these practices, used them on themselves, transformed themselves, transcended samsara, and become enlightened beings. And so it is for that reason that we treasure these teachings given to us by the masters of the past, because if they accomplished Buddhahood, we can all as well, if we follow in their footsteps. And if you think about it, that's how children follow adults in the snow, right? If we're walking in the snow and it's really small, I mean, the child's really small and they can't quite stay above the snow, they walk in the footprints of the adult who went before them. And so just for us, we walk in the footprints of the teachers who went before us. And that's why these teachings are so important. And I'm going to take a pause here to read questions in the chat on Zoom and answer a couple of those. Let's see. Someone's asked for the name of the book and somebody gave it. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you helping me out there. So let's talk a tiny bit about Gampopa. So Gampopa is known for merging these two streams of teaching into one, the Kadampa tradition, which today exists as part of, I know that some people will want to know this, because if you're kind of geeky about this stuff like me, you'll want to know where's the Kadampa tradition today. And it was the basis for both the Sakya tradition of Buddhism and the Gelugpa tradition of Buddhism. So the Kadampa informed all four of the lineages, but most especially those two. And so this is um, So Gampopa himself, let's see if I can put a few of these things together. The story about Gampopa is that he started out as a physician. He trained as a physician, and anybody who understands Tibetan medicine knows that Tibetan medicine is rooted deeply in the teachings of Dharma, because the Tibetan medical tradition arose in the land of Tibet almost at the same time or alongside the practice of Buddhism. That Tibet was not always a Buddhist country. It started out as a tradition of shamanism. Their religious practices were shamanistic. But eventually, in the 700s, one of the kings of Tibet had heard about Buddhism and wanted to see if it would be I guess the only word I can think of is an edifying, you know, that's a big word, if it would be helpful for his people. He wanted the Dharma to be of help to his people. And so he invited Buddhist teachers to come to Tibet to teach Buddhism. And so when we talk about the practices of Tibetan medicine, the Tibetan medical practices are deeply interwoven with Dharma. So you could say that Gampopa already had a very good grounding in Tibetan Buddhism from a young age, and that he studied and became a physician and was able to heal lots of people. But as these stories often go, there is a moment of change. He was a successful physician, but then his wife became ill. And when she died, it affected him greatly. He determined, based on her urging, that he would not marry again. So Gampopa then became a monastic. He ordained as a Kadampa monastic. And so at that point, he started studying the Dharma very, very deeply and very seriously. And so as he studied, he became more and more knowledgeable about the Dharma, but there was a point in his training where he had a significant dream. And in this significant dream, he experienced a yogi or a solitary practitioner coming to him in a dream, and that he was wearing a cotton cloth slung loosely over his shoulder, and he was carrying a walking stick. This figure put his hand on Gampopa's head, and then he blew as a blessing on Gampopa, and he disappeared. So he had this dream more than once. So following this, Gampopa's meditation became better. When he mentioned his dream to another monk, the monk said, "You are a pure monk of great morality." And then the monk said, "Oh, but when you see a yogin who's not disciplined, like monastics are disciplined," he said, the monk told him, "Oh, that's a bad sign." And so Gampopa disregarded his dreams. Meanwhile, the teacher who he had dreamed of, which was the great yogi Milarepa, was giving teachings to his disciples. And one of his senior disciples said to him, "Now, Milarepa, you're getting old. In case you depart to another Buddha field and need a regent, someone to teach in your place, please appoint whoever you trust and give them all of the teachings you have. Otherwise, there will be no one to lead us disciples in the future." Milarepa said, "I am a yogi. There will be no regent for me. I will not need one. But there will be a disciple who can perform all of my activities. Tonight, I will see where he is. Come back early tomorrow morning." So this dream that Gampopa had was contemporaneous with Milarepa being asked by his disciples, who is going to take over for you when you pass away? And he said, well, I don't need a regent. I'm a yogi. I'm carefree. I don't need a regent. He said, but there will be someone who will enact my activities. And tonight I will see where he is. Meaning he wasn't among the assembly of people who asked the question. And so the next morning, all of Milarepa's disciples gathered anxiously, and Milarepa said to them, soon will come one named Physician who became a monk. He will receive my complete teachings like filling one vase from another. This physician can perform activities in all 10 directions. Last night in my dream, he came to me with an empty crystal vase, and I poured all of the ambrosia from my silver vase into his. And he continued by saying, a son is born and the father is old. There will be a great being to advance the Dharma like the sun rising to benefit beings. And at that time, Gampopa took a walk and came upon three beggars who were speaking about the miraculous activities of Milarepa. Upon hearing about Milarepa, Gampopa spontaneously developed such great devotion for Milarepa that tears came to his eyes. And for a long time, he couldn't even continue walking. Later, he invited the three beggars to his room and made them some food. He inquired as to the whereabouts of this yogi, and they replied that they had not seen him, but heard that he stays in the mountains. And so, so Gampopa set off to find him. And when he finally found Milarepa, he bowed to him and offered him gold. And Milarepa said, I have no need for the gold you've offered me. Gold does not agree with this old man, Milarepa said, speaking of himself. If you want to practice the Dharma properly, observe my conduct and practice as I do. Well, it was a little bit of a difficult time for Gampopa because, as I mentioned before, yogis tend to live carefree lives and they don't hold the monastic vows of not drinking and so on. And so Milarepa at one point said to Gampopa, here is some liquor that it has been blessed and consecrated at a religious feast. And now it is wisdom ambrosia. Drink this. And he said, I'm a monastic. I can't do that. And Milarepa said that if you want these teachings from me, you will do it. And so then he drained the cup and Milarepa had made a new disciple. and so Gampopa then went on to study all of the teachings of the path of skillful means and the path of liberation under Milarepa. And Gampopa himself attained awakening through the practices. Now, if you ever read the life story of Gampopa, it is incredibly entertaining because Gampopa was a very talented meditator. Let's just put it this way. He was an extremely talented meditator. He would meditate and he would see the appearances of stars and he would see the planets in his body and he would have all these sort of supernormal experiences. And he kind of thought he was hot stuff, you know? So he would go to Milarepa and he would say, guess what, Milarepa? I had the most fantastic meditation. This happened and that happened and I accomplished this and I accomplished that and I'm becoming omniscient. And Milarepa would just say, huh. He'd say, it's not good, but it's not bad. Keep practicing. And he would send him away and as a manner of trying to encourage him not to cling to his experiences. And this happens even now. I get letters from people frequently who tell me about their unusual experiences in meditation, that they have this experience or they have that experience. And I have to tell them what Kempo Karthi Rinpoche, my teacher, said to me, which was that experiences are not enlightenment. Experiences are just experiences. They're not enlightenment. In fact, he said, you can't even say that they're part of your, you can't even say that they're evidence of any progress in your path. He said, the reason for this is he said that until we actually break through our confusion and through meditation, until we actually break through our confusion in meditation. We are confused until we break through. And that means even the experiences we have will still be a potential cause for obstacles for us if we cling to those experiences. He said, experiences arise as the result of our positive karma that we've accumulated in previous lifetimes. And so as a result, he said, people will have these experiences and think they're getting very close to enlightenment, and then they will slack off and not practice as much. Or they will think they've already arrived and already start giving teachings to people, thinking they're partially enlightened, at least partially enlightened. And they start giving teachings to people and start pretending to be teachers and so forth and so on. And Kempo Rinpoche said is that this is actually a big obstacle for people. And so what we have to do, he said, when we have experiences, he says, we actually have to consciously let go of them and not focus on them. Because if we focus overly on our experiences, perhaps writing them all down, so that we can show people what we've accomplished, or doing this or doing that, if we solidify and fixate on our experiences, it'll be like solidifying and fixating on anything that happens in samsara. And that fixation will then be a cause of suffering. And so by taking this approach with this incredibly gifted meditator, Gampopa, Milarepa was actually being very wise. He was not allowing him to get too excited about his experiences. He was not allowing him to rest on his laurels and think that he had already attained some kind of awakening. He basically studiously and caringly and with love disappointed him over and over and over again. I mean, it was kind of the let him down easy, but kind of not, because he said, it's not good, but it's not bad. And so by telling him to take a middle path to all of his experiences, he gave Gampopa what he really needed in order to progress, which was a sense of equanimity about himself, because he had been a physician, and we know how much knowledge physicians have to have, and the demeanor, the pride that a physician has to have. There's negative pride and there's positive pride. The positive pride is confidence in what you've learned, but the negative pride is to thinking that you're then above everyone else. And so Gampopa, he was saving Gampopa from his own tendency to cling by shaking his hand open again and again as Gampopa tried to cling to his accomplishment of something. Interestingly enough, if you read the life story of Milarepa, this exact same thing happened, because Milarepa, while not being a physician before he became a yogin, had been an accomplished magician and sorcerer who had been able to bend relative truth. And he caused a lot of trouble and actually caused the deaths of many people, which is why Milarepa went seeking the Dharma. I highly recommend reading the life stories of all these great teachers. Reading the life story of Tilopa will give you an idea of what he went through to attain enlightenment. Naropa, same. Marpa, same. Milarepa, the same. Gampopa, the same. If you read these life stories of the great masters, it will help you to see how they persevered, even in the face of difficulties. So in any case, Gampopa, after having this disappointment from Milarepa over and over again, he eventually attained qualities from his practice. And Milarepa basically gave Gampopa everything, all of his precious teachings, empowerments, and so forth. And he sent him to central Tibet to meditate in retreat. And as Gampopa was departing, Milarepa called him back, saying he had one more essential pith instruction. Gampopa was very happy and said, should I make an offering to you to receive this teaching? Milarepa said, no, there is no need, but don't waste this instruction. Milarepa then raised the back of his robe and showed Gampopa his backside, which was covered with calluses. And Milarepa said, "In all of the pith instructions, there is none more profound than just sitting and just practicing meditation. I meditated persistently until my backside became like this, and I achieved great qualities. So you should also practice meditation with perseverance." This made a deep impression on Gampopa's mind, and he went to central Tibet to practice. And so eventually, Gampopa, in that retreat, recognized the nature of his mind and became awakened. Even his sleep became the experience of clear light. Later, Gampopa said to his own students, "It took me a long time to stabilize my mind, and I had to work hard. But for you, my students, it will be less difficult because you possess the instruction of the profound path of method. This Kagyupa lineage has a blessing like no other. If they meditate diligently, many will reach the path. To dispel obstacles, experience the teaching, and increase meditation practice. If you do this, to dispel obstacles, experience the teachings, and increase meditation practice, it is enough to follow the profound Guru Yoga Mahamudra practice and the yoga of He." So, and basically what Gampopa said is the practices of yogic discipline and the practices of the path of liberation were enough. And so Gampopa then came to give teachings to many, including Dusun Kempa, who became the first Karmapa. Gampopa said, "When I enter the non-dual, all-pervading element," meaning when I pass away, he said, "you should not think, now the Lama does not exist. My mind, even in death, is inseparable from all of the precious Lamas and Buddhas of the three times, permeating all time and all places. Meditate, supplicate, and think of me, and my blessings will be there without yielding." Furthermore, he said, "In the future, those who think, alas, I haven't met Gampopa, should simply study and practice the texts that I composed, the precious jewel rosary of the Supreme Path, the jewel ornament of liberation, and others." He said, "There is no particle of difference. It is the same as meeting me in person. Those who are having a hard time understanding and practicing of the Dharma, think of me and supplicate with devotion. The blessings of the path will arise naturally." And so so that's a little bit about the life story of Gampopa. And I'm happy to be able to share this little bit about Gampopa's life with you, and hope that it will give you some inspiration to study the rest of the teachings in this series. Now, we're coming down to about 10 minutes before the end of the hour, and I want to mention a little bit about the makeup of the class. The book is divided into several topics, and I'll just read them for you now. Let's see if I can come to the beginning. Okay, the first topic is the primary cause of enlightenment. And the primary cause of enlightenment is the fact that we all have Buddha nature. That is the first topic. The second topic is called the working basis for attaining enlightenment. And that is the precious human life that we have. Topic three is the condition for working toward enlightenment, which is the spiritual friend, the teacher. Topic four is the method, which consists of all of the teachings of the spiritual friend. And these consist of the remedy for attachment to the life that we're leading now in samsara. The next is the remedy to attachment to the pleasures of samsara. The remedy to attachment of the pleasures of peace or the pleasures of meditation. And the remedy of not knowing the method of practice for attaining Buddhahood. Then after that, it's refuge in the lay precepts. Next is the cultivation of the mind of awakening or bodhicitta, which then consists of training in the aspiration bodhicitta and training in action bodhicitta, which is then followed by the six teachings on the six perfect virtues: generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. Following this, he discusses the aspects of the five paths of the Mahayana, and then he describes the levels of the path, the 13 levels of the Bodhisattva path. And finally, topics five and six. Topic five is the result of the path, which is perfect Buddhahood. And topic six consists of the activities of a Buddha. And so in these six topics, Gampopa describes A to Z, the practices of Buddhism. And so that's a little bit about the idea that we had, which was to use the next 11, this is the first of the 11, so the next 10 after this, classes at the 11:30 Dharma Talk. Some of them will be given by Lama Tom, some of them will be given by Lama Adam, some of them will be given by me, some will be given by the senior meditation instructors, Eric Weinberg, Marcus Casey, Jim Dunn, and Kathy Jackson. And so we're all going to work together as a team to present this book in a very simplified fashion that we can then add to later on to make it a larger course. So thanks for listening and for watching. I'm going to pause here and see if there are any questions in the Zoom chat room. And if not, we might do some meditation. Unfortunately for my Facebook audiences, I want to let you know that I will not be able to read the Facebook questions. I'm afraid to even touch my screen with Facebook running and for fear it'll interrupt the broadcast. So, but I will be checking that as well afterward. And then after class is over, I'll check the questions on Facebook. So if you don't get your question answered here on Zoom, you can get your question answered over on Columbus KTC's Facebook page. So let's see what we have. Do we have any questions? Yeah, it doesn't seem like there are any questions in the Zoom chat. So I can unmute if you want to ask a question on Zoom. You can unmute and ask your questions now.
Lama Kathy?
Yes.
This is Sydney, and I have, be courageous and ask a question that might be rather simple, but it's not for me.
Me neither, I'm sure.
When you said break through our confusions, could you give me a definition of what you mean by confusion?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a little joke here and say that I know all about confusion. I have so much of it. Yeah, in fact, I was just talking to someone, one of my other Dharma friends, about this week, and there's a prayer where we ask the masters of the Mahamudra lineage, please grant me your blessing so that I achieve co-emergent wisdom, and I said to myself, wow, what a beautiful aspiration, but what does it mean? And so I looked it up and talked with some of my other friends who are lamas and got an understanding of what co-emergent wisdom was. And that helped me to explain your question, which is, what is confusion? And so if what we're praying for in praying to become enlightened beings, if we're praying for co-emergent wisdom, then that means that what we're experiencing right now is co-emergent confusion. Okay. And so I really have a sense of how I can try to explain this. So let me give it a try and see if it helps. Right now, when we experience anything, whether what we experience is a thought, or we experience a sound, or a taste, touch, smell, and so on, everything that we experience as being other than us. There's me, and then there's everything else. There's the me, and Bokar Rinpoche called this Bokar Rinpoche's book, The Profound Wisdom of the Heart Sutra, is one of my favorite books for explaining this confusion. So if you can get that book, if you can't, let me know and I'll help you. I'll lead you to it. But anyway, he says, we divide the world into two parts. Our experience and perception and thinking and so forth is all dividing the world in two. There's the me and the not me. Me and not me. And then once we enter into this dualistic relationship, me and not me, then everything we experience after that is colored and clouded by this idea of dualism. And what we learn through Buddhism is that there is nothing other than the experience of mind. And I'll explain that. Right now, I'm looking at the tree outside the window and I'm looking at the table over here. And I'm thinking they're there, right? They're there. We see a tree, we see a table. And therefore, if I like the tree, I'll be happy. If I don't like the tree, I'll be unhappy. So my clinging to the tree as being real, solid, permanent and unchanging is clouding my Buddha wisdom, because I'm not seeing my Buddha wisdom while I'm busy with all this other stuff. And so this is what is meant by co-emergent confusion. When we experience something and instantly experience it as something other than the mind, that's where our confusion comes from. And so, for example, the teachings say, after the understanding that there is nothing other than mind, that's the first verse, comes the understanding that mind is not a thing itself. So what this means is that that tree may actually be out there, but it doesn't exist in the way I think it does. It's not permanent, not solid, not real, not unchanging. Same with the table. Same with my thoughts. My thoughts are not solid, permanent, real, and unchanging, but I tend to think they are. But all of these things, the tree, the table, and so on, they're appearing in my mind. And the appearance of the tree in my mind is not real. The tree in my mind is a mental experience. And actually, it's a mental experience if I close my eyes and imagine the tree. It's a mental experience if I go to sleep and I dream the tree. But right now, looking at the tree, that tree did not jump into my mind. I don't have sticks poking out of my mind. There are not material in my mind. I experience the tree in my mind. And because I'm not an enlightened being, I conceive of the tree as being other than the mind in which it appears. And so because of that, we only are ever able to experience things as confusion. And so because we don't recognize that our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, as well as all of our perceptions, are happening in the mind, and that the mind itself is not a material thing, it is, I think, Trolloc Rinpoche in his book, Karma, what it is, what it isn't, and why it matters. He said, our self-concept is actually not a thing. Our self is not a thing. It's a bundle of processes. It's just a bundle of processes. The Buddha called it a stream of being. And just as you can't put your foot in the same river twice, you are not the same from moment to moment. There's a little bit of cohesion there, but it's mostly just moving on. And so confusion arises when we don't realize this. So I don't know if that helps you at all, Sydney, but I wanted to try it to see if it would help, because we don't recognize that our mind is the seat of all of our experience. We tend to project outwardly, and then we either like things or dislike things or feel indifferent. And the Buddha called these the three mental poisons: attachment, aversion, and bewilderment. And that's how we then live our whole life in this web of confusion, liking some things, disliking other things, and being indifferent to virtually everything else. Does this help at all?
It does. Thank you very much. It's like, okay, this is like just down to the surface a little more. I'll hear it many more times before I fully understand it. But that gives me a start. So thank you so much.
Yeah. No, thank you for asking. I remember when the previous Kalu Rinpoche was asked about this, and he said, our mind has as its nature Buddha, but right now our Buddha nature is not uncovered. It's covered over by lots of confusion. In fact, he said, there are four veils. And in fact, Eric just spoke on this the other week. He said, we don't know who we really are. We don't know the nature of our mind is empty luminosity. Our mind is not a material thing, and yet it experiences that. It's not a material thing, that's its emptiness, and yet it experiences things. That's called luminosity. We don't recognize our minds that way. And when we don't, we have to fall back on our habitual tendency to posit a self, a me, who is experiencing these things. And then once we posit a me, then there's an other. And then once we have self and other, we have the drama of mental affliction, liking, disliking, and so on. And then we take action based on our thoughts. And then that makes it all worse, because it's then we really are solidified in our belief in me and not me and so forth. So I hope this is helpful. And part of what we're doing in Dharma is we're slowly wearing out the veils, or slowly dissolving the veils through the practice of meditation and virtue. Ooh, I just see it. We're at the bottom of the hour. I have time for one more question. If there's a question from the Zoom audience. Okay, then I think we'll stop here for now, and we'll just sit quietly and meditate for just a moment, letting our mind come to rest on an object such as the breath, and we'll just sit quietly for a minute or so. Okay, thank you. Now we'll dedicate the goodness of this session to all sentient beings in general, but specifically all of those who are struggling in these times, whether they're struggling with illness or difficulty in their minds, whatever they're experiencing, may they be free from this suffering and may they come to Buddhahood. I'll recite a short prayer in English, and you can kind of join in your heart and your mind, thinking that you dedicate the goodness from this session to all suffering beings. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thanks, everyone. Thank you for joining on Zoom today. We will be back here at 11:30 on next Sunday, and we'll begin teaching on the chapters of the jewel ornament.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.